Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, an astrophysicist, and it's Ask an Astrophysicist named Tyson, Ask an Artist named Chicago. Did you see the premiere of The New Cosmos last night? Host and astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson from the Museum of Natural History, the Planetarium, will be on to take your calls about galaxies near and far, even our own. And the acclaimed artist Judy Chicago critiques art education today, both coming up, along with the obscure SAT words that actually became part of your vocabulary. We'll take your calls. But first, on Sunday, the mayor went to church, but not to the horse stables. He preached the pre-K tax hike gospel from a pulpit in the Bronx, but passed on actor Liam Neeson's invitation to tour the stables where the Central Park carriage horses live. About a dozen city council members did share the equine moment. So with that as fodder, let's talk some New York Monday morning politics, beginning with WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen. Hi, Bridget. Why are the carriage horses back in the headlines?
Well, you know, this was an issue that Mayor de Blasio had said that he was opposed to. He had said during the campaign, and he said very early on in the administration, sort of strikingly early, that he would make it such a priority so soon that carriage horses were not appropriate for the year 2014. They weren't safe for the animals. They weren't safe for the streets. And he said that it was going to be one of his priorities to ban them early on. What we also know is those animal rights activists who opposed the carriage horses were also big backers. Well, those, to frame it correctly, those folks who were opposed to those carriage horses launched a campaign against one of Mayor de Blasio's opponents, Council Speaker Christine Quinn. And so NYCLASS, New Yorkers for Livable Streets, put out a series of ads that were attacking one of de Blasio's chief opponents, Christine Quinn. There has been attempts to sort of see if they were connected. We know that Mayor de Blasio has spoken at their at an event that they held last year, but, you know, it was more their opposition to Quinn than their support for him.
And so here is Liam Neeson on The Daily Show last week. He was promoting nonstop the movie, no doubt, but also a nonstop to carriage horse rides. Listen.
He won't even take a meeting with the horse carriage industry. This guy won't. He's supposed to be representing the New York people.
Is this a job you've done? Have you been in that industry before?
I know a couple of the guys. I've been in the stables quite a few times, eating.
I think you might have pulled my wife and I around Central Park one day.
So why is Liam Neeson getting up to his saddle in this issue, and why did he stage this media event yesterday?
It's a good question. He knows some of the carriage horse drivers. It is an industry that does also have a lot of Irish immigrants in it. And he really had been pushing to get the mayor and other city council leaders to come and tour the stables to show them that these animals were, in fact, cared for in a very humane way.
And let me jump in, because should we see this primarily in class and ethnic terms, working class, traditionally Irish immigrant or Irish American, horse carriage drivers, whom Liam Neeson identifies with, versus an animal rights elite?
It's certainly a question, and it's a way that I think he's sort of raised the issue. You know, in some of the various coverage of his trip to the stable yesterday, he did point to the fact that these stables are located on the far west side, and that far west side real estate is something that, you know, arguably could be very valuable. And it's certainly one of the suggestions that has been made in this debate that perhaps there is another thing behind why people want to ban these carriage horses, that in fact it's not just for the health of the animals, but it's for the actual place where they live on the west side, and that real estate there, and some
a classic Manhattan real estate grab.
Exactly.
And I've heard, tell me if this is true or if you know it to be true, that at least one, maybe more, of the prominent backers of maybe NYCLASS, that group that supports the horses, or others in the animal rights movement, have a personal interest in that real estate and donated money to the de Blasio campaign? Is that something that's true?
There's been some reporting about the fact that some folks who have interest, who have real estate interests, have supported the NYCLASS group. One of the other issues that's also interesting about this, though, is if this industry were, you know, put out of business and you were talking about the animal rights issues and you wanted to move these horses out of New York, you know, Janet Babin from the WNYC newsroom did a really great story that talked about the fact that some of these rescue stables, they don't have the money or the space to cater to these animals. And so if you're talking really about it and framing it as an animal rights issue, that potentially eliminating this industry doesn't necessarily save the lives of these horses.
Listeners, you want to call in on this? Are you choosing upsides on this? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And de Blasio said yesterday that he would visit the stables, as Liam Neeson wanted to do, but on his own terms. And he says
when
only
his schedule allows.
When his schedule allows, he said. And also, he said only to help the workers there to find other jobs. And so Neeson did get a dozen city council members to his event at the stable. I'm sure the de Blasio administration was taking names. But that's just 12 out of 51 members of council. So does the mayor have a clear majority of council on his side to abolish this industry?
I think the mayor has a clear majority of council on his side for most issues. On this particular issue, it'll be interesting how quickly they decide to move on it. It's, you know, a Quinnipiac poll in January found that 60% of voters said the mayor should leave the industry alone. You know, so there's, it's unclear if this is an issue that will be of the utmost importance. He did talk about it. Clearly, there's been a lot of attention focused on it. But I think it's pretty clear right now that Mayor de Blasio's number one priority is pushing his pre-K tax plan. And, you know, there are other issues that are happening, as sideline issues. But part of the reason Mayor de Blasio did not go to the stables yesterday was because he was visiting churches and as well as members of his administration to push that tax plan.
He was at the Heavenly Visions Church in the Bronx. First Lady Shirlane McRae was also at a church. So was school's chancellor, Carmen Farina. And not just to push universal pre-K, because he's already got the backing he needs from Albany for the idea. It's just a matter of whether they'll pay for it with state funds, as the governor wants, or a city income tax on the top 1% in the city, as the mayor wants. Was that the mayor's real rallying cry yesterday?
That has been his rallying cry, obviously, throughout the campaign and for months. And he continued to talk about being, you know, making sure that there was a consistent funding stream being his number one priority, and has talked about how the city should be able to tax itself to implement the plan here in New York City, and called for congregants to make their voices heard to their legislators. That, you know, at this point, I think what they are trying to do is, you know, start up that grassroots effort that was so helpful to get folks out to the polls. What de Blasio needs at this point is for people who believe in his idea for universal pre-K through his tax plan to convince lawmakers in Albany that that's the best way to do it. The challenge is it might not be the lawmakers from New York City that need as much convincing. It's lawmakers in upstate New York, through western New York, that may have, that may be tougher to sell on this issue.
And on that note, Governor Cuomo is going to be joining us around 11:30 this morning, so we will follow up. And also joining us now, in addition to WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen, is Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News. Hi, Ken. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here.
So the mayor's pre-K tax hike rally in Albany last week, Ken, looked anemic at 1,000 people compared to the pro-charter school rally that the governor spoke at, where there were 7 to 11,000 people, depending on which newspaper you read. Did the mayor's rally actually hurt his cause?
Well, did it hurt his cause? It didn't help it. I don't think, you know, it's a good thing he was in church yesterday, because I think for his tax plan, he needs a lot of prayer. I mean, his cause is, it seems to have been set, you know, a month ago, except the mayor keeps fighting. Albany is not expected to do the tax plan this year. They, you know, I would expect they're going to raise the amount of money they put toward pre-K programs to make it more acceptable to the mayor, so he can also claim a little victory, but he's not going to get his tax plan.
He's not going to get his tax plan. But do you see any sign of a compromise in which the mayor would take yes for an answer on the state pre-K funding that the governor is offering?
Well, eventually he's going to have to, because if they do it in the budget, which is expected, that's due to be in place by April 1st. So we've got three more weeks. You know, the mayor says he's going to go down fighting. That some of his people say it doesn't hurt him to fight, because the more they can, you know, keep it in the press, the more they can keep the focus going, that maybe Albany would be more willing to give more money, even if it's not through the tax.
Aha, you bring up the next thing I was going to ask about, because not only did the mayor speak about this in his church appearance yesterday, and the First Lady and the Chancellor, but Al Sharpton did at an event on Saturday, and Sharpton, apparently referring to the governor, said, if your method can cover the goals, then let's do that. But don't give us 20% funding on a 100% problem. Let's sit down and make sense, because one thing we can do is count. So is the money less in the Cuomo plan, Ken? And does Sharpton's line there suggest that it's coming down to a dollars negotiation about how much state funding, but within the governor's model?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something even the governor has said. You know, the governor has said, look, you know, we don't think it'll go online as fast as the mayor has said, but if it does, we'll have the money. That, you know, we'll have a blank check, quote unquote. That's not good enough for the mayor, and my guess is you will see the legislature add money to what the governor proposed. You know, the governor proposed a five-year statewide $1.5 billion funding plan, $100 million for this year. For sure, you'll see that $100 million go up dramatically. And then it's going to, you know, the mayor will say, hey, it was our argument that got the state to move. You know, we got pre-K on the radar, and then we got more money than we had initially anticipated.
So you're really laying out an endgame scenario here that could take place. Bridget, from your reporting on the City Hall side, do you think that's where this is headed?
I think that at this point, the mayor is not willing to back away from his argument for a tax hike. But I think you start to hear a change in some of the conversation, or some of the language he's using as he talks about his push for universal pre-K, acknowledging how far we've come, the fact that, you know, it's universally accepted that we're not having a debate over whether it's a valid proposal, that at this point people are acknowledging that it would be valuable, it would be useful, it's vital to early childhood education and to, you know, starting young people out on the right path. But at this point, I think he's trying to sort of very gingerly step back from saying the only way to do it would be a tax hike. You know, he was this morning even made some comments where he said that he would be open to alternatives as long as they included the consistent funding stream. So, you know, I think Ken's right that there is a way for him to potentially still claim some victory if the governor's budget includes enough money to pay for the number of seats he wants to have come September.
And I can't remember any story ever, Ken or Bridget, maybe you can, where the city wants to do something big, the state offers the city all the money to do it, and the city says, no, we don't want to take somebody else's money. We want to pay for this ourselves and tax our own people.
There are a lot of people who have raised that same question, starting with the governor. You know, look, honestly, I think the end game was laid out the second that the governor said we're going to fund it statewide and we're going to have enough money there. Now, the question will be, what's enough money?
Yeah.
But the reality is, as much of an advocate as the mayor is for this, and as important as the role is, you know, he's learning what other mayors have learned. He doesn't have a final say in Albany. He can scream, he can kick, he can, you know, cajole, but the reality is the legislature and the governor are going to do what they want to do. And, the only thing he risks is turning a win-win into a win-loss, because if he holds on too long and he clings to the tax to the bitter end, then people are going to say he lost, because even though he'll claim the issue, well, you went down with the ship on the tax.
Well, let's cycle back, or maybe cycle is the wrong word. Maybe I should say let's trot back to our phones, because I think we have a horse carriage worker or owner calling in. Dave in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. No, I'm not an owner. I'm just a driver. I'm calling to you from 6th Avenue and 59th Street. I just wanted to comment.
From 6th Avenue and 59th Street, are you on the horse right now or in the cab?
About 5 feet away from me is a very large mammal named Mabel.
Hi, Mabel.
Hi, Mabel. I just tuned in to hear that you hear that there is a possibility that there's a real estate angle to this whole proposal of the demise of this business. And Steve Nislik, who founded NYCLASS, runs a developmental group called Edison Properties. And a few years back, they had, I don't know if you call it a prospectus or analysis, I'm sorry, but it very specifically designated the horse carriage stables on the west side as prime, underutilized real estate.
So somebody wants that real estate for their own purposes. And are you convinced, Dave, that not just your livelihood is at stake here, but that the horses are safe and have a decent quality of life trotting around Midtown like that? Because, you know, people talk about the life for these horses where they have to walk around Midtown breathing the car fumes all day, listening to horns like that. And, you know, that's no way to treat an animal.
If you're going to get rid of a business and usurp the whole industry, you got to have a compendium of authoritative, scientifically backed evidence, and that's going to come from large mammal equine veterinarians, and not a single one of them agrees with the animal rights position. These animals have been selectively bred for 7,000-8,000 years to pull something. The Romans put down paving stones 30,000 years ago. I mean, you'll hear that the animals shouldn't be walking on asphalt. Well,
they didn't have exhaust fumes in Midtown traffic then and there.
Well, you make a valid point there, but once you get up to the park, we have our own lane going through the park. We're not behind cars. We are off to the right-hand side, and the cars go to the left of us.
Dave, thank you very much. Good luck to you, no matter how this turns out. And here is a NYCLASS member, Ellen in Manhattan. Ellen, you've got the other side for us, right?
Brian, yes. Hi. I don't know what the stables look like, but I've seen the stables firsthand, and they are just in wretched condition. But this driver that was just on, that is just a lie, because the horses are in the park. Maybe 2% of the day. They're outside standing there, and we've all seen them standing lined up when it's 102, when it's 105.
Well, no, over 90 degrees, I think that industry shuts down by city law, right?
No, they don't, Brian. They didn't. They did not.
I think there's some. Do you know, Bridget, offhand?
I don't know offhand.
I think there is a daily temperature limit. We could double check that. But that's what I thought. But Ellen, go ahead, finish your thought.
It's cold,
yes.
And do you know that in 2012 we had 24 accidents? 24. I had them all listed. So I don't remember about 2013 because we were busy negotiating with Mayor de Blasio. But it is not true that NYCLASS is anything but animals first.
What do you make of someone like Liam Neeson, who I think has a kind of liberal actor reputation, getting involved in this on the side of the industry?
I never thought of him as having a liberal. I have seen reactionary remarks from Liam Neeson before, years ago. So, you know, I'm going to go back to the same thing, to Jean Fitzgerald, who I believe was even born in the old country. She died for this. I mean, she... 30 years. She lived on Central Park South. Mm-hmm. This is Peggy and Ed Fitzgerald. Long before your time, my grandmother and my mother used to listen to her on radio. And
including WNYC, once upon a time.
And she wanted nothing more than these poor horses off the street.
Ellen, I'm going to leave it there. We've got both sides of that one laid out for the moment as we talk to WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen and Ken Lovett, the Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News. So I want to gallop around to the charter school issue. And Bridget, does Mayor de Blasio have two charter school co-location lawsuits being filed against him now, one from each side? You have parents at that East Harlem Success Academy charter school that's been in the news for getting its co-location within a public school denied. The chancellor has promised to look for other space. And at the same time, Letitia James, the public advocate, filing suit to stop the 36 co-locations that the mayor did approve for within public schools?
It's sounding like a very legalistic morning in the charter school debate. Yes, it's a litigious morning. Those two lawsuits, I think, present a bit of a headache. What's interesting is the reaction to the filing of the lawsuit for the charter schools that are operated by Eva Moskowitz. Very quickly yesterday, as soon as news that lawsuit was going to be filed came out, there was just as quickly reaction from organizations like the NAACP and the Black Institute, led by, you know, longtime de Blasio supporter Bertha Lewis, criticizing that lawsuit. It's a challenging issue, I think, for the mayor to deal with, because part of what he has done in his battle for the universal pre-K tax, and certainly how First Lady Shirlane McRae has framed it, she's talked about it as being the civil rights issue of, you know, this generation, and making sure that children have access to early childhood education has been something that this administration has made a priority. On, you know, the other side of that, in the charter school debate, so many of the students who are served by these schools tend to be Black and Latino children in neighborhoods where their public school alternatives aren't considered alternatives.
And Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the Daily News, how much is this becoming another breakout Cuomo? I think the phrase that was at the Daily News that said Cuomo using de Blasio as a foil on issue after issue last week. And when de Blasio had his pre-K rally, Cuomo came out to this big pro-charter school rally. So is he trying to distinguish himself from the mayor on this, perhaps particularly in his reelection campaign year?
Oh, absolutely. This fight with the mayor, don't forget we were sold before the mayor took office. These two are friends. They're going to get along together. But it's amazing how quickly the governor has elbowed the mayor, his good friend, every chance he's had since the mayor took office. He turned around his, he's fought him on the pre-K. He turned around the argument about inequality and said, well, it's the mayor who wants inequality for the upstate and suburban 4-year-olds by just trying to have the city have a top-notch pre-K, and now with charters. Now, the governor gets a lot of money from charter school operators and the hedge funds that fund them, but it's an issue that is big upstate. It's an issue that's big in the suburbs, and it's also big in the city. I think the governor is trying to stake himself out as a moderate and as he heads into reelection, and the mayor is giving him every opportunity to do so.
And I think it there's a carry-on effect, because there are other issues that the de Blasio administration, you know, has put forth as things that they want to work on immediately. Minimum wage is another example that, you know, the way the governor has responded has made it, you know, essentially it feels like dead on arrival, certainly at least in this session. And so,
Ken, go ahead.
And it's not just the governor. I mean, a lot of the mayor's allies in the legislature, you know, what the mayor has to realize is the lawmakers, as much as they might agree with where he's heading and the direction he wants to bring things, they have to deal with the governor. You know, if they want their bills done, if they want different things done, they have to deal with the governor. And so right now, a lot of them have complained. The mayor gives them the pre-K, which is a very big, heavy lift, and, you know, something that the governor is fighting. And then he throws in the charter school. They thought the timing of that was horrible. And then he throws in the minimum wage, which a lot of them said they weren't alerted was coming. I think they just feel he's biting off too much, and he's putting too much on their plates. That's putting them at odds with the governor. And ultimately, he may not get much of it.
By the way, I'm looking at a site called Holoverse, which ranks and describes various influential people on their religion and politics. And for Liam Neeson, they say. Neeson isn't so much into politics. When he was still a student in school in Northern Ireland, he didn't even know why his fellow students were protesting one of the most violent days in his country's history. He's Catholic, grew up Catholic. Neeson recounts being caught off guard during his college years by protesters who accosted him while he was leaving class one day because they thought he was a scab or supporter of the British Royal Forces, but he was just ignorant. Neeson said, "That's how out of touch politically I was. It was terrifying, but it was a real awakening for me that I had better start learning about my history." And then it goes on to say, Neeson became a naturalized U.S. citizen in 2009. Some question and answer sites are convinced he's Republican, but there appears to be no evidence of this except for the fact that he's a little antagonistic toward the liberal health culture of Los Angeles. He said, "In Los Angeles, it's like they jog for 2 hours a day and then they think they're morally right. That's when you want to choke people, you know?" So just a little background since it came up on
it's good to have a little understanding of his political context.
Neeson's political orientation, such as it is. Ken Lovett, before you go, and knowing that the governor is going to come on in about an hour, I see that there's an article in the Daily News today that says the governor is raiding MTA funds to move them into New York State general operating. What's that about?
Now, what the governor has proposed is there is a tax, an MTA operating tax, that raises money to $40 million. He's looking to redirect from that fund to pay down debt. And the Assembly Democrats say they're going to fight that in the upcoming budget talks.
The MTA has debt.
What's that?
The MTA has plenty of debt.
Well, and this would help pay some of that down, and the governor's people are arguing, well, you know, this helps the MTA because we're going to help pay down some debt.
Oh, they're going to pay. I'm sorry, just so I get it right. The governor is going to use this money that would have gone to MTA operating to pay down MTA debt.
That'll be part of it, yes. And the Assembly is saying this money could be better used to help hold down fares and other operating expenses.
Right. And, Bridget, before you go, we talked about the horse carriages. There is another kind of vehicle known to trot around Midtown with passengers on board. And over the weekend, the mayor appointed Meera Joshi, the new head of the Taxi and Limousine Commission. This has to be approved by city council, but presumably she will be. And she was already the counsel to the commission. Any hint of taxi policy in that announcement? We know de Blasio hasn't been a fan of the outer borough green cabs, for example.
It's not exactly clear where she stands on, you know, the big taxi issues, borough taxi, taxi of tomorrow, taxi apps. She was interviewed on WOR last night and talked about just a couple things that suggested where she's going to be focusing a lot of her energy. She talked about safety, and it's important to remember that the mayor's, you know, signature transportation initiative, Vision Zero, includes efforts. It's an interagency plan. So it's the NYPD, Department of Transportation, and the TLC that need to work together to help reduce pedestrian traffic deaths.
Did she talk then about the Vision Zero traffic safety idea to have black box computers in the taxis automatically lower the fare on the meter when the taxi is speeding?
I'm not sure if she went that far. I know that she talked about safety and making that Vision Zero plan and implementation of it one of her priorities. And she also talked about the administration's commitment to making 50% of the taxi fleet wheelchair accessible by 2020. Still not exactly clear how they will do that, but we know that those are among the priorities of the Taxi Commission. It's also interesting that her selection is interesting, given that she was part of the TLC under Mayor Bloomberg. And, you know, it's not something that was ever hidden at all, that there was some pretty significant tension between the former TLC commissioner, David Yaski, and Mayor de Blasio. So interesting choice. Also interesting framing of her appointment, you know, praise from a lot of different constituents within the taxi industry. You know, she was supported by the head of the taxi union, support from, you know, players in the black car industry. And, you know, those aren't folks who always are on the same side of an issue. And so it was interesting to see that she was getting praise from, you know, several different constituents.
there are some passengers who would take that black box deal happily and say, driver, step on it. I'll pay less and I'll get there faster. WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen, Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the Daily News. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.